Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And today, well, you'll be traveling with me and Gina Houston through, I think, a wonderful, wonderful experience of The Wizard of Oz. Now, all of us at one time or another have either read the story, but we've seen the beautiful movie with Judy Garland that today is even more popular than it was when it came out. Gina Houston, the visionary, as she has took this beloved story and created an understanding with so much of the story that I think is really very, very insightful. And I want to welcome Gina Houston to the show because we're going to be talking about transformational lessons from that magical place called Oz. Gina, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Don. It's a pleasure to be with you and with your wide audience, and especially to talk about how we go beyond our tornadoes in our life and discover the extraordinary capacities that we all contain to traverse the great roads of Oz.
Tornado is a very appropriate term, as in many parts of our nation right now that have been literally devastated by tornadoes. And I think just about anyone listening to this show, whether it is an actual physical storm that has assaulted many areas of the U.S. at this time, whether it is a tsunami financially, whether it is a divorce in a relationship, whether it is a failure of a business. I think that we've all gone through these challenges, but for those that are listening to the show, perhaps are not familiar with you, you are a woman that has accomplished a great deal. A long time ago, you decided that you were going to step outside the box of a lot of attitudes, perceptions, and modalities. And you're known as a visionary thinker. You love to teach. The area of philosophy has always been very close to your heart. You developed the social artistry leadership model used by the United Nations Development Group. You have worked with leaders from around the world, like Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung,
Yes, not Carl Jung, by the way.
Not Carl Jung.
No, I was very young when he died, but everybody else, yes.
You have been involved with people in political positions, like the Clintons.
Yes.
You've been involved with leaders at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
You've been involved with people in NASA, and you've written more than 26 books.
I think 27 is the latest count. I kind of lost count, but something like
All
that.
All right, there you go. Mm-hmm. So you're a woman that is very much an activist in your own way with The Wizard of Oz. When you decided that you were going to take this beloved story, what was the button that gave you the aha to literally take it apart and reconstitute an understanding that I think was meant to be observed by the writer that wrote The Wizard of Oz?
Mm-hmm. I think it's the question that great stories activate our instincts, not just for survival, but for transformation, and that we are living in clearly the most profound, difficult, challenging time in human history. Other times thought they were it. Well, they're wrong. This is it. I had long made a study of and practice of, I've worked in 108 countries through the UN and other international agencies, helping societies to both keep their culture while they grow and transform their leadership at every level. In fact, I'm giving a speech on this at the United Nations this next week. But America is in big trouble in many ways. I've just come from China, which is in really big trouble. What I find when I work in these different countries is find their core story. So it might be the Ramayana in India or the life of Gandhi, or in the parts of Europe, it might be the Parsifal myth, the quest for the Grail. But in America, the core story that everybody seems to know is The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And well over a billion people have seen it from the Frank Baum book, which, by the way, he downloaded. His great-granddaughter wrote to me and said, do you realize that great-grandpa Frank Baum, actually, it was just suddenly all there, and it wrote itself. He took up his padless pencil, rather like J.R. Rowling, who received a complete download of Harry Potter, you know, and then set about to put it out. So it was like an archetypal story, a story that existed in some sense in the creative unconscious, that a man or a woman of real art and artistry in writing could both receive and then bring to life. Now, this story is so critical. It is so deeply, deeply, deeply critical because it tells a truth. It tells the fact that we are living in an outmoded situation, aren't we? In many ways, we are in the biggest shift in human history. But we haven't been prepared for it. It's a story about preparation, how you prepare for it, how the tornado of the enormous challenges takes us into another possibility. And what does she do? She meets, first of all, the great support system of her life, which is the Glinda, the archetype of the great helper, the archetypal friend. And then she meets disenfranchised parts of herself, the Scarecrow with his mind, who thinks he doesn't have a brain. Actually, he's very brilliant. The Tin Man, who thinks he doesn't have a heart, but actually has his radical empathy. The Cowardly Lion, who shows himself, though he's scared all the way, he has tremendous courage. So what I do in the book is I try to help people find different levels and powers and capacities of their mind, discover the ways of radical empathy, of crossing the great divide of otherness and finding a whole new capacity for relationship and service, and then ultimately the courage to create, the courage to do, the courage to hang in there, the courage to truly be in this incredible time and to do the higher purpose work that is ours to do.
So, I agree. And there's a couple of comments that I want to quote from your book. One, the world mind that is rising, which is just those few words conveys an image that people may say, oh, you're out of your mind. How can the world mind be rising when we have so much garbage that's going on, when we have the brutality, when we have wars, when we have famine, when we're having pestilence, when we're having all of this? And that is a relationship that you go into with Oz. And you make a statement about women. Women have always been and continue to accomplish heroic feats with a difference, that their emphasis has tended to be on process rather than on product, making things cohere, relate, develop, and grow. This is a very significant change. And the old way of perceiving things, of doing things, is going through severe death throes. And there literally is a war of type, just as you speak of in thought. And I'd like for you to expound on that a little bit, because you travel all over the world. You're seeing it not just in the United States, but you're seeing it elsewhere.
Well, what I am seeing, and when we're at the United Nations, we sort of laugh about it, but the truth is that when you see who is doing the work, I don't mean just in the fields. I mean the work calling the conferences, making things happen, finding water for their village. 70 to 80% are women, and they are women of a certain age, often, who empower the young men and the younger women to, you know, to be trained to do the work of creating societies, villages, cultures that really will work for everybody. I mean, postmenopausal zest is no mere metaphor. It's one of the great untold stories. It really is. I mean, everybody talks about women, and they talk about the assault on women and all the bad things that are happening, you know, the backlash with the rise of women in the last 100 years to full partnership with men in the whole domain of human affairs. Obviously, terrible backlash. What they're not telling is the tremendous story of women's incredible accomplishments. You know, it was very interesting in China this past week, last week, where we had the great ecologists of China and some of the great masters of how do you shift an environment to one that is healthy, literally coming in from all over the world because China announced an SOS. You know, it is in deep trouble ecologically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the women ecologists, the Chinese women ecologists. And it was strange. You would have found it fascinating. They spoke in very high voices in that language, which is staccato and yet tonal. And people were almost frightened by their fierceness as they talked about what their government was not doing and what needed to be done. And they told it like it was, in
mm-hmm.
ways that perhaps the other officials did not to the same extent, not with the fervor and the passion. And you knew that they were going to go out there and profoundly make the difference. Well, that's something that is happening, but it is done with a kind of, as you said, as or I wrote somewhere, process rather than product, making the things relate, seeing things in terms of the whole. I'm involved in a big project right now with some of the most critical women in the world, and what we're doing is we're designing a world that works from a feminine perspective. What does it look like? Now, I'm not a feminist like some of my friends because I'm more of a humanist. I have to work with, you know, men and women, et cetera, all over the world. But I do have to say, with the rise of women in our time, which may be the single most important event of the last 5,000 years, because when women are there in balance and partnership with men, then everything shifts.
And that's the key. That is the key. You have the partnership, and it is very much due right now, where we get away from exclusivity in the sense of, gee, this is only for the males, this is only for the females.
Yes.
It takes both the male and the female to create a harmony, and that is partially what is given in The Wizard of Oz. We're multiple components. We have mind, body, spirit. We are in need of understanding the emotional side of ourselves. And it's time to deal with the reality that we're going to have these upheavals. There's no way that we're not going to have upheavals because the old world, which is represented both by the wizard and also the witches, as far as I'm concerned,
all right,
representing something that says, we don't want to change. We want things to be behind. We don't want transparency. If we have transparency, then that means we're going to be held accountable. And I don't care what side of the table, male, female, doesn't make any difference. And it's that accountability that comes out. And that's one of the things that the wizard talks about. And when you go through the Wizard of Oz, you bring out what you call meta motivation. And you talk about social levels, esteem, self-actualization, staying alive. How many people feel right now, because of the economy, that they are just absolutely barely hanging on, and they wonder if it's worth hanging on? Well, you have to get to that point where you say, it's just not hanging on anymore. I've got to pull myself up, and I've got to look at things differently, and let's see how we can take care of this. What can we do? How do we make a shift? How can we be innovative? How do we persevere when we think we're supposed to have it easy? It's a big, big challenge, and that's what the story of Dorothy portrays. This is a young person, and she's just beautiful. She's so sweet, and I love the dog, Toto. And you have all of these characters that really represent the ongoing challenges of the human dilemma. When you were putting this book together, I can just envision you feeling a sense of joy when you were doing it, because you probably had an awakening to a whole new perspective of this download that was given to Frank Baum.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. And that letter from his great-granddaughter meant a great deal to me. I have used this story before. In 1984 and 1985, with the help of the Department of Commerce, believe it or not, I went to 17 cities. We charged almost nothing, $25 for the whole weekend, and that included two lunches. And there were never less than 900 people. And we used The Wizard of Oz. It was called The Possible Human and the Possible Society. And we used The Wizard of Oz as a journey of profound transformation in ways somewhat different, but still running close to the way you develop your mind, your soul, your courage. What are the problems of your society in Norman, Oklahoma, in Toronto, in New York City, in Raleigh, North Carolina, in Vancouver, Canada? But in the 17 cities, we develop people develop all kinds of capacities using the story, and then bringing in some of the mayor of the town or the woman who really runs all the helping services, and we created all kinds of ongoing committed groups, teaching learning groups that would continue to grow and would then do particular things too. Clean up the beaches in Santa Cruz, to bring green money to Vancouver, to create a whole new relationship between African Americans and Caucasian people. I mean, and many of these groups have still continued after all of these years, almost 30 years. So I had real existential experience, Donna, with the story and seeing how powerful it was. And so then 30 years later, I figured, well, I've written all these books. It's really important to do something that is deeply mainstream and will get people moving in ongoing teaching learning communities. Now, this is very important because the difference between the male hero's journey and the woman's heroine journey is that the woman's journey goes with a team.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes the disempowered, and because of her compassion, she empowers them and they empower her. And it's in that togetherness of the team. I mean, in a very unlikely team, a little white girl, a little black dog, a member of the mineral kingdom, the Tin Man, the vegetable kingdom, the scarecrow, and, of course, the animal kingdom. So it is really cross-species, cross-genders, interrelated, and that is who we are in the world today if we're not working together across gender, culture, ethnicity, even in some cases, well, in all cases, species, we're not going to make it.
That's true. And I think there are many people that are becoming aware of that, and it's a little scary to them. I want to bring out a word that you introduced in the book. There was a new word for me. It's entelechy. Now,
entelechy.
I may not have pronounced
yes.
it correctly.
Entelechy. It's a Greek word. It means, well, it's best described by what it does. It is the entelechy of an acorn to be an oak tree. It's mm-hmm. the entelechy of a popcorn kernel to be a fully popped entity. It's the entelechy of a baby to be a grown-up human being. It's the deep, purposeful pattern that resides in each one of us, and most of us are not aware of what it is. We just go through our growth cycles with no sense of our own, of the deeper spiritual, psychological resources that are really there for us. So what I do in the book is I give people a sense of their own entelechy, just as Glinda was serving as the entelechy as the higher purpose and the higher guidance for Dorothy. And we find that by putting people in touch with their entelechy, and I give an exercise in which you physically actually feel yourself both physically and psychologically in touch with this higher purpose, this deep, purposeful, passionate, energized reality, but felt as personal, then we find that it's probably one of the most important exercises that I have ever done in the literally tens of thousands of exercises that I've invented over 50 years or more. But we find that people then feel themselves guided, loved, supported, encouraged, empowered to do the important work that everybody uniquely has to do.
Yes, and I agree with that. I think that I've never met a person that doesn't have a purpose.
Yes.
I've never met a human being that is not talented, gifted in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go through daily life, you can, if you're mindful, you can see the richness of the communication capacities of so many. And I think that is where, and I will call it the grandmother image.
Yes, lovely.
Where
lovely.
The grandmother, if wise, recognizes that her experiences are not going to be able to keep the younger generation from going through their painful moments, because
mm-hmm.
every generation has to live and has to
yes.
exist in this world, good, bad, or indifferent. But you want to empower them with an understanding that, they're one, they are responsible. They have to think. And two, that there is that place where they can go to, where they can talk to someone. And sometimes you're going to get scolded by grandmother, and other times you're going to be hugged and just the Band-Aid put on your wounds and say, okay, keep on going. It's a phenomena of life, and there has been such a detachment from that. And I firmly believe, Jean, women like yourself, and even me, that are older, that this is part of our responsibility to assist in this transformation. Because without our voices, how can a younger generation know? They're going to go, they're just going to be pablum fed, that's how I will say it, and they go, gee, this is the way it's supposed to be. No, we need innovation. We need imagination. We need them to know it's okay to have passion. It's okay to be dedicated. It's okay to be different. And it's okay to live life with a sense of enthusiasm so that life is made richer because they are who they are. And I loved your section on the brain. And you have a comment by Merzenich that is the cerebral cortex. This sounds very formal, but it's what he said, is actually selecting, refining its processing capacities to fit each task at hand. It doesn't simply learn. It is always learning how to learn. Neuroplasticity is coming out more and more. And I just think, thank goodness, somebody woke up to this. And that is part of the Wizard of Oz, too. That is the part of the human experience, and you bring that out in your book.
Well, this is what we try to do, that we are a learning process. And that we are gifted neurologically, psychophysically, spiritually, with inner processes that are always yearning to learn more. And just like the brain can really restructure, create a new architecture by what we put into it or don't put into it, how we meditate or don't meditate, how we play, how we engage in different orders of discovery and experience. This shifts the brain and the whole mind-brain system altogether. And the whole notion of Oz is that Oz is us. I mean, that's why I call it the Wizard of Us. You know, mm-hmm. Oz is us. Oz is the playing field of the spectrum of our possibilities. And what happens is in Oz, and I want to give people the experience of Oz. That's what I try to do in this book, to give them the experience of playing with their minds in brand new ways, of exploring the depth and dimensionality of their hearts and feelings, of really activating their courage to create and be. Because once we start activating and we are cooking on more burners, so to speak, and then suddenly, by the time it is time to go home to the realize, oh, it was all in my own backyard, meaning the collective unconscious of the human race, that we are not simply, a bag of skin, an encapsulated bag of skin dragging around a dreary little ego. We are an organism environment, symbiotic, with worlds within worlds and worlds without of ourselves. And we have found ourselves in that critical moment of human history in which, as I say, what we do will make a difference as to whether we grow or whether we die. And no one is unimportant.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You have a marvelous story about a woman, Ariane Kirtley, in your book, and how she grew up in West Africa, France, and the United States.
Yes.
And she went to the Azawakh region.
Yes.
And share that story with us, because I think it's a powerful one.
I share it so much. I'd like you to share it. Why was it powerful to you?
It was powerful to me because this woman, she was acquainted with poverty, but she had never seen what I'd call the dregs of poverty. The dregs of poverty at its ugliest, in her experience. And both people and animals dying, more than half of the babies born dying of dehydration. The people were wonderful. She loved them. And she said, I've got to reach out. Maybe somebody can help. And she became aware that it was her job to do it. And this I found very, very powerful. She didn't know what she could do. She was one person. She had absolutely no resources at all. And when she called her father, he happened to be at the time that she called him, sitting next to a woman by the name of Janet Cornelius.
Yes.
And that woman, in that moment, talk about synchronicity.
Yes, yes.
In that moment, when she heard the story via this telephone conversation, she wrote a check for $20,000 and then another check later on for $100,000 so a borehole could be made in a place that I don't think any of us have heard about, Tungawashin.
Well, one of the things, of course, is that the money showed up. Yes.
Yes.
Because when you commit yourself, when you commit, and boldness has genius and power and magic to it, when you commit yourself, it's as if the universe says, oh, wow, we've got a live one there. Mm-hmm. And then the synchronicities abound.
Mm-hmm. And then she went with the children at school. They donated their nickels, their dimes,
right,
their pennies. All of this, people cared. And I think that is the key. People cared. They really did care. And it's just amazing. And her husband ended up traveling to Nigeria to supervise construction of one of the wells that was mm-hmm. being developed for this. And that's important. And I know there will be people who say, well, we ought to do the same thing in the United States. We do the same thing in the United States. And I think that's one of the things about the American character, because we have such diversity. There are so many people that are here that have been able to enjoy freedoms that they couldn't in their own countries, that when they have a chance to give or to do for someone else, someplace else in the world, it's out of gratitude for the fact that they have the abundance. We have situations going on right now in our country that people are stepping up and saying, this is what I can do. And that is what part of the Oz magic is, that we have this innate power within ourselves, and that's one of the gifts that Dorothy ends up getting from her magical experience.
Yes.
I know we're just about out of time, Jean. What would you like to leave as a thought with my listeners?
Well, it is, I think it's from a poem by Christopher Fry that says, the human heart can go to the lengths of God. Dark and cold we may be, but this is no winter now. The frozen misery of centuries cracks, breaks, begins to move. The thunder is the thunder of the flood, the flow, the upstart spring. Thank God our time is now, when wrong comes up to meet us everywhere, never to leave us, till we take the longest stride of soul folk ever took. Affairs are now soul-sized. The enterprise's exploration into God. What are you making for? It takes so many thousand years to wake. But will you wake for pity's sake? So, dear Donna, and thank you for your brilliant sensibility about these things. I mean, you've said it much better than I can. But what you are also saying, and I'm sure you're saying it on all your programs, is this is wake-up time. This is the time where we really discover the meaning and the purpose, or as my old friend the Dalai Lama says, we create a new kind of culture, a culture of kindness, and that is ultimately what it's all about.
I concur. Jean Houston, it's been a delight having you as a guest. For those of you listening, you want to find out more information about her recent publication and also about the other wonderful books that she's put out, go to her website, JeanHouston.com. This latest publication, The Wizard of Us, Transformational Lessons from Oz. It's filled with a number of disciplines if you wanted to take them, but if nothing else, if you just pick it up and read it, give yourself the gift of time so that when you're reading it, you can think about it. That is one of the magical gifts that books give us. You hold them. They are something. They are yours. They never get tired. You can pick them up, take them with you wherever you go. And if you've loved The Wizard of Oz as many, many millions have, I know I love it, and you never get tired of watching it. The reason is the essence of the story is right there in front of you, and you're absorbing it without being aware of it. And that's what Jean Houston has brought out in this book, The Wizard of Us. Jean Houston, again, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Donna.
A delight, and I wish you the best in all of your endeavors.
And
thank you,
too,
for the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
This is
Goodbye,
Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to have more good things to share with you. Don't go away.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to corporatedirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for corporatedirect.com.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all you need to do is give me a buzz, and then I always like to know where you're calling in from. First name or initial is all I need from you, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of concern to you. And I just want to say it was so delightful having Jean Houston on the air. This is a very accomplished woman, and she's an example of what we as individuals can do, dependent on what our passion is. Now, one of the things that I wanted to share with you is some detailed information about what research and science is coming up with. It's absolutely marvelous, and it's due to some technology. But before I do that, I wanted to share with you about a Haw Branch haunting. Oh, yes. Don't you love ghost stories? I love them. I think they're absolutely marvelous because everybody has a special story to share. I had a friend, a very dear friend, Norma. She passed away from breast cancer a number of years ago, but Norma was from England, and we would talk about ghost stories because I was broadcasting at the time, and she was a producer of a show that I was on regularly at the time, and we became very, very good friends, so we'd always exchange spooky stories. And in England, of course, that is the part of the world where spiritualism really was very, very strong, and it still is even to this day, where psychic phenomena, mediumship, seances, all of this was very popular. And she would tell me her stories about what she experienced herself. For example, when she was at home, when she was growing up, she lived in a very old area, and she said she would hear the wheels of a coach and the clop, clop, clopping of horses. You know, the old coaches like they used in the 1800s. Going down the street area, and she talked about having ghosts in her house. Well, Norma wasn't the only person that I shared her stories with me, and I am collecting stories still. But in 1966, 1967, and 1968, there was a very special series of experiences on May 23rd of each of those years. Aha, are you curious? Well, let me tell you. On May 23rd of 1966, 67, and 68, ghostly phenomena was going on. Blood-curdling screams. That's right. They would go through this house. Now, this is a very old house. The house was called Haw Branch. And this was a Victorian manor that was built in 1745 in Virginia. And Virginia has a lot of these old places. Well, there was a family, McConaughey, and they had lived there for generations. Why those 3 years? Well, this is the story as it was shared with me. The screams of terror began in November, actually, of 1965. But again, May 23rd was the trigger date. Now, in 1967, the screams stopped. That's right, they stopped. However, something else happened. There was a lady in white. That's right. And she was wearing a floor-length dress that had a very full skirt on it. Well, during that time, that's what women wore. I never could figure out how they could be comfortable in things like that, but that's what they wore. And, of course, it was glamorized quite a bit throughout movies. The family dog. When the occurrence happened in 1967, that was outside. It demanded to be let into the house. And it ran into a drawing room. Now, this is what happened. This is what a family member of the McConaughey family observed. The dog's name was Blackie. This dog, the daughter, found, was sitting, wagging its tail, and looking up at this lady in white who was standing in front of the fireplace. Totally visible to the daughter as well as to the dog. Now, on May 23rd, 1968, they heard very heavy running footsteps. That's how it was described. And there was a bird with a 6-foot wingspan that was seen in their yard, which was lit up by a beautiful full moon. Also, at another time, there was a man seen carrying a lantern emerging from their barn. But when he neared the house, all they could see was the lantern, and it was floating all by itself. In 1969, there was a relative, because of all these special happenings on May 23rd, that gave the McConaughey family a pastel portrait of one of their ancestors. It was the woman in white. Her name was Florence Wright. Now, when they opened up the parcel, the family found that it was a black and white charcoal drawing, but they went and they put it over the library mantel where the woman had been seen. Then this is what happened. Women's voices could be heard in the room, and then what occurred after that is something that you'd only expect in a sci-fi special, maybe written by Stephen King. The portrait started changing color. Florence McConaughey, whose name was Florence Wright, she showed up as a blue-eyed, red-haired girl sitting beside a pale jade vase with a soft pink rose in it. That's right. The black and white portrait totally came to life, totally came into full color. Now, this is the story, after this situation evolved, that they found out. Florence died before the picture was finished. And they say that her spirit had been locked in the picture. And the voices that were heard in the house were those of two other spirits helping her to escape. Don't you just love it? Spooky stories. I think they're cool. And I can guarantee you the McConaughey family shares that story to this day. Why? Because it's their experience. Someone may say, oh, my goodness, that can't happen. I got news for you. That and stranger things have occurred. But I wanted to share that with you today. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the toll-free telephone line where you can call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Earlier this year, January, which is the start of summer in Antarctica, there were a dozen tractors that were towing sleds. Why? Well, these tractors were loaded with all kinds of scientific equipment. In fact, it came to over 1 million pounds. And they were first at the United States McMurdo Station, and they had to travel 614 miles across the ice to do some special research. Now, it took them 2 weeks to do this. 20 research, more than 20, arrived in Antarctica, and they were going to use a gear to bore a hole nearly half a mile into ice. That is quite a job. And they were the first, these researchers were the first to ever get a clean sample of ice from one of the continent's hidden lakes. And they say it is one of the most pristine bodies of water on the planet. It has not been polluted. What this has done, because of the technology they were able to employ, and you can imagine being in the bitter, bitter cold of Antarctica, that is very difficult to get equipment to operate in a decent way. It's always been a challenge. Now, they've always known that there are vast reservoirs of water underneath this phenomenal ice cap. Do you know how big the ice cap is? It's 5.4 million square miles of ice. Can you wrap your mind about that? 5.4 million miles of ice. And they have been able, over the years, to map about 300 subglacial lakes. Now, why don't they freeze? Well, there's geothermal warmth. Now, for a long, long time, it has been felt that nothing could live in this environment. Absolutely nothing could live. It's too cold. Well, guess what? They found out differently. They went to what's called the Ross Ice Shelf, and more than 2,000 feet below the surface, there is a Lake Willans, and it's about 20 square miles in size. They used hot water so that they could drill a 20-inch wide hole down to the lake. And then they sent down a robotic submarine to take pictures, get videos. They spent 4 days, 24-hour, brutal cold. They were getting as much water and sediment from the lake's bottom that they possibly could. Now, this was one of their biggest challenges, not just getting equipment to operate, but to make sure that they did not contaminate the work that they were doing. They did a borehole that hot water was flowing in at 30 gallons per minute. They filtered stuff. They had to make sure that there were no microbes that came into the environment, so they used ultraviolet lights. The sub, the cameras, cables had to be sterilized. Labs were set up in shipping containers, and they found life. That's right. They have found there are these phenomenal creatures that have been living in this icy cold world for who knows how many millennia. They've got a phosphorus-containing compound, regulates energy in the living cells of those creatures they found. They say it's a huge sub-ice aquatic ecosystem. It's swimming. It is so full of life. Absolutely amazing. Now, there was a British team that had gone to another area, and they had technical difficulties. When there was a Russian team that went into a particular lake, they had used kerosene as part of their processing, and it contaminated samples. Well, it is just absolutely amazing. A whole new area of exploration and technology that people didn't have a clue would even be a possibility. Amazing story. Yes, there is life in Antarctica. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, do you like vino? Well, maybe we're going to know a little bit about you, depending on what your favorite is. When we come back, a little bit of whimsical survey here that I'm going to share with you, and a little bit more. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. 888-627-6008. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a paranormal experience, such as seeing a ghost, having precognitive dreams, out-of-body experiences, or other happenings? If so, Donna would like to hear from you. She's putting together a book of 100 stories from people who would like to tell their story. If you'd like to submit yours, send an email to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Again, send your story to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to include your contact information as well. Thank you.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. 888-627-6008. I love these surveys that come up because it appears to me that some people just don't know what to do with their time. And they must have a lot of fun processing some of these surveys. And this one is with wine. Why not? I mean, wine is something that has been around with every culture in one form or another. Same with beer. And it's something that I just think people, it's a part of life. It actually is like a food, in my personal opinion. But they have done a survey, and they evaluated 2,000 wine drinkers. What fun they must have had. I wonder if they did it at a wine tasting facility. I don't know. But they've obviously put out different wines like champagne, white, red, rosé, and dessert wine. Well, what if you are a champagne person? I have a girlfriend that she says the ultimate in life is champagne, lobster, and caviar. Boy, you cholesterol-hating people, I tell you. And she said, I know that's not supposed to be, but she said those are my three favorite things. Well, champagne has always represented, in the minds of many, a very elitist type of environment. You're very wealthy. Champagne represents elegance. Well, in the survey, in their evaluations, they say a person that loves champagne usually is a sparkling sophisticate. Ah, yes. And you love elegance. You are the type of person that you really enjoy beauty. You like things to not be crude in any form. You really enjoy it. I wonder if that pertains to sparkling cider as well. Well, we'll just skip that one because that's not in the list. White wine. What is it about white wine? Well, they say you're a nurturing CEO if you like white wine. Poised, practical, according to the study. See, those people that like white wine usually are the bedrock of hearth and home. Not a problem making decisions. You see things clearly. And you really are a person that gets things done. Now, what if you like red wine? Well, you're a person of confidence. Yes. And you are a person that enjoys culture. You don't mind new experiences. And you have enough self-confidence where you are able to take on the unique, the unusual. And you have eclectic taste, rosé. Now, rosé is a lighter kind of a wine. And I see people that really enjoy rosé, you're a warm charmer. And they say you are the person that often will be that individual that's the storyteller, that will be invited to parties because people just like to have you around. You're kind, you're outgoing, and you just really have a very rosy attitude about life. Now, what about dessert wine? Dessert wine, you just use a little amount, but usually it has a very potent flavor to it, and it's sweet. Well, whether it's Muscat to Riesling, it has a sunny disposition. That's right. And that's what you reflect. You've got wonderful optimism about life. You're comfortable gently sipping a glass of wine as being proactive with people. Now, some of you may say, well, Donna, I like them all. Woohoo! That means you've got it made. You're sophisticated. You're nurturing. You're a leader. You're a laid-back optimist. You have confidence. And you're a charmer. Wow, what a powerhouse you are, especially if you like all of them. But maybe you're selective and discerning and discriminating about the particular flavors you like best. I just think it's wonderful to find out about these studies that someone spends who knows how many hours with to let us know a little bit about maybe what and who we are. Oh, my goodness, summer is coming up just around the corner, it seems. Of course, you wouldn't know it here in the Pacific Northwest. We've had one rainstorm after the other. The flowers are loving it. The trees are loving it. The colors are just brilliant because this has been one of the nicest springs we've had. We've had some gorgeous temperatures. Beautiful sunshine is finally beaming through after some heavy rains during the night. But getting trim, what is the magic formula? Well, I'm sorry to say there's really no magic. It's usually taking in less calories than your body needs, typically. But you need to be aware that just getting up and getting active can make a lot of difference. I had someone that lived in Alaska that was a client of mine, always had a weight problem up there because of the long winters and the cold. Well, when you're in those environments, that is conducive to your eating more starchy things, typically. But what she found when she moved to Hawaii, she was able to release 30, 35 pounds just so easily. And she said, I wasn't starving myself. But she said, it's warmer here. I don't need the food like I felt I needed up in Alaska. And so consequently, she was able to trim down. Well, that's the magic of spring. Get yourself outdoors. Do some walking. Get involved in your gardening. Go walk the dog, the cat, the ferret, whatever you've got. Get out, get moving, and enjoy the environment that you're in. It's just alive right at this time of the year. It's so exciting to watch gardens come to life with their magnificent colors and the various blooms that are there, the lushness of the various greens. It really invigorates you. And being out in the fresh air, even if you have the cooler temperatures like we have here in the Pacific Northwest, boy, gets rid of the brain fog that so often we have because of the colder months. 10-minute walk, that helps. Making sure you're getting enough sleep helps, too. They're finding if people don't have a lot of sleep, often the pounds won't come off. So be good to yourself. Realize you don't need to be on a starvation diet. Just sort of get active. Be mindful of what you're eating, but don't be fanatical about it. But more than anything else, enjoy life. Enjoy where you are. Enjoy the blessings that you've got. And I think you'll find yourself in good shape for summer and smiling in the whole process. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about wild medicine solutions. If you're into herbs, if you want to know and understand how you can help your body stay well, whatever the season of the year is, you're not going to want to miss Guido Massi. This is going to be a wonderful, wonderful interview, as I think most of my shows are. Why? Because there's so many good people out in the world that are making a difference, and you need to know about them, just like I need to know about them, so we can make a difference in our own lives. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. I'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Donna Sebo here. Smile. This is a gift. The gift of this day of life. Smile and enjoy it to the fullest. Who knows what surprises of blessings might be awaiting you. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.